Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
Boy, not only will people fight to protect the system that they're inured with, people will fight to protect ideas that often really have no meaning. I'll get into that here a little bit. Welcome to the Mark Breslin Show here on the Crusade Channel. Part of the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be. It's about 6 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone. We're live 6 a.m. Monday through Friday to 8 a.m. Central Time. Followed by my good friend Mike Church, host of the Mike Church Show. As a live call-in program, that means you can call anytime you'd like at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. I want to remind you of my website, markkreslins.com. You can email me through that website anytime you'd like at mark@markkreslins.com. You can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMarkKreslinShow, or follow me over there on Twitter at Mark Kreslins. Well, you know, today's just one of those days, I guess. It's, you know, there are difficulties in this world that are just part of the human condition, I guess. You know, yesterday I was kidding around about maybe it's just time to do sports talk radio or move over to music. And my overnight discussions did not change my view on that. Maybe it is time just to do sports talk radio, and let's talk about the potential of Russell Westbrook staying with the Oklahoma Thunder. Let's talk about how improved the Golden State Warriors are going to be. Let's look at the preseason professional football coming up, and let's gauge the Big Ten, the SEC conferences in football. Maybe we can get into some pro bass fishing and talk about things that appear really to be more important, but also I think probably more agreement on than we can when it comes to issues related to government or politics or the future in that regard. And or maybe we just do music all day, and I could see why. There are days that having a top 40 radio program really is kind of appealing. I'll be honest with you. Trying to go to the microphones here and argue for both a adherence to accurate history and then obeying God, obeying Matthew 22, the great commandment, to use our minds to think forward. What do we do now with an evil, bipartisan, corrupt, evil government we have on our hands? What do we do as Christians? Becomes exhausting. And so there are just times I feel like I want to bring up Yahoo Sports and let's just talk about what's going on in the sports world today. As a matter of fact, why don't we do that? Let's see what is happening over there in the sports world today. Haven't had a chance to look there yet. All right. We got some big changes coming in the in the SEC, I see. Curry's being condemned over there in Hawaii for charging $2,000 for his basketball camp. I think it was James Harden. It was getting on him about that down there in Houston, or in San Antonio. But you see how compelling that radio would be? We probably would grow a bigger show if I could get excited about it. But yet I find myself stuck in this dilemma that I can't get all that excited about sports as I sit here and watch what could be something really great just fall right flat. And a lot of this I lay at the feet of myself first. As you all know, I was a senior legislative assistant for two conservative Republican members of Congress. And I participated in this scam of a bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt, evil government. I took great pride in calling myself a senior legislative assistant. I had my gold embossed card. I'd be quick. I had all my pictures of me shaking hands with the president, or special pictures from the president, or Newt Gingrich, and all those pictures on my wall. They're no longer on my wall, folks. They've been down for well over a decade. I thrust my chest out and talked about how cool it was to work on Capitol Hill and walk the halls of Congress and all this stuff. So I indict myself first. At the same point, a lot of the mess must be laid at our current political thinkers, who, even from the evangelical Christian community, insist on things that either never were or never will be. And so, there are just days when you feel like you're arguing and you're discussing things and you're whistling into the wind. And there's just an insistence that something happened that never did, something will be that never will be. And I'm honestly, folks, I'm flummoxed on what to do. I'm flummoxed on how to get through. And perhaps it's just me. Perhaps it's just I'm not a good enough communicator. Who knows what it is? But I find this dilemma amongst many of my friends, dealing especially within the confines of the Christian community. And it brings about weariness, it brings about tiredness, it brings about, okay, well, so I guess we are going to create an either-or option. Either it is one way, or let's just batten down the hatches and accept fate. Even though as Christians we don't believe in fate, we supposedly believe in the sovereignty of God. That God is in control and is aware of all things at all times. But, I cannot tell you how many defeatist Christians I have run into in just the past few days as they look at the prospects of a national election. Why? Words have meanings, folks. Or if they don't have meaning, why don't we just grunt? Here's my new talk show. If words don't have any meaning, and then when they're strung together into a sentence, they express thoughts and ideas, then why even use words? Why don't we just become like the monkeys the evolutionists want us to become and just grunt at each other? Just take it from each other we want? But if words do have meaning, which I think we all would agree they do have meaning, then some of the terms we use, certainly within the Christian community, and I speak specifically to the evangelical community at this point, some of the words we use to describe the mess we're in, to describe the problems we face, to describe the solutions forward, really just are meaningless. For example, I've been discussing these ideas with some folks here in the past few days, but actually it's been months. What the heck does Christian America mean? We seem in the Christian community to have this insistence that we were a Christian nation at some point. And that the implication is if we were, then we are now. And then inevitably that leads you back into a discussion of we need to restore it. But let's pause, as I did last week, as I was discussing the oath I took when I enlisted, to uphold and defend the Constitution against enemies, both foreign and domestic. Let's examine, what does Christian America mean? Words have meanings, and when strung together into a sentence, they express thoughts and ideas. Okay, there's a contention out there in the Christian community that we were a Christian nation. Now, what does that even mean? Call me. Help me understand this. 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. You're welcome. I'll put you right through. Just like, what does it mean for me to uphold and defend the Constitution against enemies, both foreign and domestic? What does that even mean to me today? I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend about this. What does it even mean? Am I supposed to take up my post down on the Gulf of Mexico around Houston? Am I supposed to go over to West Palm Beach and stand guard there against the foreign enemies? I'm not in anymore. I don't have access to my M16. I have an AR-15. I suppose I could bring that. I'm quite sure I could not get back into my uniform. So what does it even mean to me to keep my oath that I'm held to the rest of my life here? Words have meaning, and when strung together, they express thoughts and ideas. So what does it mean to defend the Constitution against domestic enemies? What does that mean? I believe we have domestic enemies here. I believe there's 545 of them right now in Washington, D.C., or 544, 435 members of the House, 100 members of the Senate. That's 535, plus one president, 536, and eight justices, so 544. I believe we have 544 domestic enemies right now, and I think we've got a few hundred thousand of them in the parasitic bureaucratic class. Okay, so let's apply the standard of my oath to them. What does it mean? I'm tired. I am so tired of rhetoric. It wears me out. It expresses, number one, that people aren't wanting to press their own thinking. And that, to me, is a violation of the Great Commandment. We're to love God with all of our heart, all of our soul, and with all of our mind. So when we use rhetoric as a political weapon to describe what we think without understanding what it means, number one, it has limited impact. The people that actually are putting their words into practice are in control of things right now. For example, I've been told, and I've heard this 10,000 times, any law that violates divine law is no law. Okay, that's a great theory. Words have meaning, and when strung together, they express thoughts and ideas. What the heck does that mean? Any law that violates divine law is no law. Okay, well, right now on the planet Earth, we probably have about 55,000 laws that have no divine origin whatsoever. Shall we talk about the reality of India? They're not exactly structuring their system of laws under divine law. So how does India, now again, practically speaking, setting aside rhetoric, clearly the nation of India as a nation is in violation of this rhetoric. Any law that violates divine law is no law. Now that's attributed often to Blackstone. I'm not so sure Blackstone paints it quite as starkly as that. But I've heard this theme around Christian politics for as long as I can, you know. And when Christians hear it, they cheer, yeah, you're right. You tell them that no law that is not divine law or a law that is not a divine law is not a law at all. You tell them. Well, what does that mean? On our books here in these United States, hashtag the American Union. We've got hundreds of thousands of laws that are not divine at all. There's no divine authorship behind them. But we've got them anyway. So what does it even mean when as a response to the corrupt mess we have in Washington, D.C., the Christian response is any law that violates divine law is no law? What does that even mean? It sounds good. I get everybody likes to pound their chest and say, well, we proved you there, didn't we? Well, you didn't prove anything. Because guess what's still on the books? Thousands and thousands of non-divinely inspired laws. Guess what's on the books around the world? This is reality. This is where we really live. We live today, July 12th, 2016. That's where we live today. On the planet Earth today, as the sun rises for us here in hashtag the American Union, there are thousands and thousands of laws around the world governing the lives of people that have absolutely no thought at all in whether they were divinely created or not. They're just laws. Now, I may like the idea of laws finding their origin in the divine, but how does that happen? This goes back to Christian America. What does Christian America mean? What does that even mean? Does it mean that every person, all 320 million people, sign into church every Sunday morning? Does it mean that back in 1776, all 3 million people signed into church every single day? Do you think that that's what happened back then? Pretty easy to prove that's not what happened back then. Do you think that Christian America means that every founding father, every member of the Philadelphia Convention, and every person in the ratifying convention were devoted Orthodox Protestant evangelical Christians? If that's what you think it means, that's not reality. That's not what really occurred back then. So what does Christian America mean? And does it mean that when they, if you presuppose these were all Christian, devoted, Orthodox, Protestant, because this, let's be honest, I forgot who it was who said it, but there was some guy over in the English Parliament that said, let's be honest, cousin America has eloped with a Presbyterian parson. This was a Protestant revolution in 1776. The members of the Black Robe Regiment, the term was coined by Peter Oliver in Boston. The members of the Protestant clergy back then were rallying away in their pulpits Sunday after Sunday about the evils of King George, kind of painting him as the new Pharaoh. And George Washington was their Moses. Well, do we think all of those people that were in the leadership of the Protestant Revolution in 1776 were all deeply devoted followers of Jesus Christ? Therefore, we ascribe the term Christian America to that period of time because they all were, and they were all creating laws and systems of government that were perfectly in line with the Bible. Their laws were divine in origin. If you're going to make that assertion, it's incumbent upon you to prove that point. I would say they were affected by Whig political philosophy, Scottish Whig political philosophy, the Enlightenment, as much as they may have been affected by their understanding of the Scripture. Was Christianity a dominant point of view in the 18th century? Yes, of course. I mean, it would be nonsensical to argue that it wasn't. Was it a heaven on earth? Of course not. There were crime statistics created back then. There were crimes that were committed. There were people of ill repute. There were people who drank way too much. There were bad fathers. There were bad mothers back then. There was not, you know, the 1770s, the 18th century was not some utopia on the world, on the planet Earth. And yet I hear well-meaning Christians so often use the term, pointing back to that time, as evidence of a Christian America. And again, if words have meaning, which I hope we all agree they do, now maybe we don't. Maybe we just really should just go to grunting. Get away from using words and let's go where the evolutionists want us to go, which is full bore into just being an animal. My gosh, if you look at Yahoo in any given day, as I talked about yesterday, their new strategy to get us to become just the animals they want us to be is to focus on the sexual nature of the human creation. And so if we can just get everybody to be just as sexually minded as they can, I'll get into that here later in the program. If we can get people to be just like the bonobo monkeys, well, now we've really moved them towards understanding who they really are. They're just an evolutionary product, and there is no divine, and there is no transcendent truth. Your truth becomes your truth, and my truth becomes my truth. So why don't we just help assist the evolutionists along? And how about we just go full bore into acknowledging we're animals, and it really is only the fit survive. Why don't we just grunt our way into full domination of our fellow man, and stop using words, because obviously words have no meaning. Or words do have meaning, and when strung together in a sentence, they express thoughts and ideas. And so it's incumbent upon Christians who are going to make the assertion that we need to be a Christian America to prove a point, number one, when we were. What does that mean? What does that actually mean? You know, I get accused of pursuing a futile enterprise here with secession. Yet my Protestant brothers and sisters who accuse me of that fail to remember that was exactly what they did in 1776. Exactly what they did. I can prove that. I can factually prove they seceded from England in 1776, then fought a war to realize those truths that they identified in the Declaration of Independence. So my Protestant friends out there who tell me it's an act of futility to consider secession, well, I will say back to you, it's a act of futility to think you're going to restore a Christian nation that never was, because you won't even explain what a Christian nation is or looks like. I can tell you what secession looks like. I can prove it on a historical timeline. I can point to a point where the colonies were under the control of the King of England and the Parliament. I can then prove to you a point in 1783, when the hostilities ceased between the countries, and these United States became sovereign and independent, Article 1 of the Paris Treaty. I can prove it. Yet nobody can ever call me and prove or define what this glib notion of a Christian America even means. Folks, if we have any chance of changing anything, which I would argue and agree is very, very slim, we at least have to be clear and honest with what we're saying. People are not listening to the evangelical community right now, or for that matter, the Catholic community either. So we have a, we may not like the fact that we have a pluralistic society, but guess what? We've got one. We may not like it. In a, what would you expect with a country of 320 million people that has experienced literally hundreds of years of immigrations from all points of the world? I can go to Oklahoma City this afternoon, have a cup of coffee. I can run into a Chinese person. I can run into a Korean person. I can run into a Taiwan person. I can run into an Indian down there. I can run into a person of Polish descent. I can run into somebody from France. You know, we've prided ourselves on this idea of being a melting pot. Well, when we signed in, when people became citizens, is there a question on there that says, are you a Protestant, Catholic? Are you a Christian? I don't think there is. I'm saying that now without knowing for sure, but I'm going to check into it during the break. I don't think part of the citizenship test of to become a citizen of the United States is to prove that you're a Christian. So, in a country of 320 million people, hashtag the American Union, how could there not be a pluralistic society? I don't even know how we can say that. And then we wonder why people don't listen to us. No, Kreslins, we were a Christian nation, and by golly, we got to restore Christian nation, Christian America. What does that even mean? Let's go to the phone lines here and talk to Eric in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Eric, welcome to the Mark Kreslin Show here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Help me out, Eric.
Oh, I'm going to try, but, you first had me scared because I was getting ready to call you and say, don't you dare do that. Because I'm getting myself prepped to go down swinging just like you guys. And
good man.
You guys all have got me motivated, and I've ignored so much for so long, it's scary.
Well, me but, too, brother.
We have to go into your, it's like we have a fictional, mythical lifestyle.
Yep.
We've all just been ignoring the truth and just things that have been going on for so long,
yep.
We can no longer do it.
Yep, and right.
You're, don't give up because I'm going to be there right behind you guys.
Thank you, Eric. And you said the key thing. We live in a mythical world that never was. Go ahead.
I did my 4 years of service in the United States Army, and I was Mr. Hate to use the word bad, but mm-hmm. You know what I mean. But
I know. Yep.
And I fell into everything. I felt that I had, because I was an American, I had the right
yep.
to go with the influence and do what I was supposed to, and it was all flawed.
Yes.
Even when they taught you that you could deny an unlawful order, what even was that?
I know. Boy, Eric, you're hitting it. Now, you and I both took an oath, right, to defend the Constitution against enemies both foreign and domestic. We've been told now since we've been discharged that we're held to that oath for the rest of our lives. Yet, practically speaking, Eric, for you and me, what the heck does that even mean?
It no longer means anything to me because,
right.
It's like I cannot defend the abortions that go on. I
right.
cannot defend the wrongs that are just committed on a daily basis. I can no longer sit back and watch all the complete negativity that's just gone on.
Right, right.
I mean, and I'm hypocritical. I've done it for my entire adult
yep.
life. Even
Me
though
too.
I thought I knew what was right, I'm starting to get myself motivated and you guys are getting me going, and I'm getting everybody in my family scared. But anyway.
Well, brother, you're always a refreshing voice. I always appreciate when you call, and I'm glad to be able to call your friend. So I appreciate your call, friend.
I totally appreciate you, and keep up the good fight. And
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. All right, you have a good day. Well, thanks, Eric, for the call, and you're welcome to call the program. Help me out. If words have meaning, and when words are strung together in a sentence, they express thoughts and ideas. Please help me understand what Christian America means in the 21st century. What does that mean here today? You see, when we say things like any law that violates divine law is no law, that may sound good, and it may warm your heart when you hear that, but let's deal with the facts of today. We've got a law on the books. Well, we don't really have a law. We have an opinion by nine politically connected, seven of nine politically connected lawyers in black dresses who have authorized the murder of $56 million. Now, $56 million babies. Now, do I think that's a divine law? Of course not. Of course not. But it's on the books right now. And you know what? There are parts of the hashtag American Union that, given a chance to end that, there are some states in hashtag the American Union, given the chance to end it, would end it, and there would be many that would keep it. That's just the facts. Now, we can spend our entire time, which we've seemed to have been doing since 1973, either we fix all 50 states or we fix no states. Well, blood's on our hands for that strategy. Why? Because we've got to keep this country together, right? Why? Because hashtag it was a Christian nation. Hashtag we've got to restore Christian America. I'm the guy who's chasing futility. Well, because we're a Christian nation and then it goes to the next level, we were divinely inspired by God without a shred of proof, objective proof. You can I don't care what I subjectively like Vietnamese food more than I like Thai food. But there's no objective standard out there to say which one is better. So you can say all you like. You can subjectively feel that God supernaturally inspired, created, designed, whatever you want to call it, it's not even a nation. See, we can't even get that right. I wanted to say the American nation back in 1776. They didn't see themselves as part of a nation like we do today. This is where I'm beginning to think Christians just should not be involved in politics at all. They should just focus on building their churches and their community, serving their fellow man, and stay away from politics. Because we've done an excellent job of marginalizing ourselves into oblivion to where nobody's listening to us. The data is not good in this on this front, friends, and it's data. Now, we can pretend it's not data, and we can say, well, you know, you watch and see. If God wants to divinely do something divinely supernatural, I'm not going to be able to tell him to do it. I can't sit here and say, okay, God, here's your marching orders for the day. You are to bring down this evil, corrupt, bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt, illegitimate government. You're to do that, and I'm going to sit here and just wait for you to do that. I can't order God around. He's God. I can't tell him what to do. I can ask. I can humbly beseech. I can, with great humility, request. But I'm in no position to order God to do anything. If he wants to divinely come and take down this bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt, illegitimate government, that's his call. I really do trust in the sovereignty of God. But I'm also mindful of my responsibilities as a Christian here. And it's to have a good reputation inside and outside the church. Read 1 Timothy chapter 3. That passage is directed to elders in the church, but read it. I think there's kind of application to all of us. We're supposed to be ambassadors for Christ. So I'm supposed to be a good representative of Jesus Christ out there in the community. And part of being a good ambassador is actually getting our history right, resisting the urge for rhetoric that has no meaning. It serves no purpose for the church today in hashtag the American Union to claim that the objective of the evangelical Christian movement is to restore a Christian nation. We weren't in 1776 in the way that people seem to mean it. Again, while this was a Protestant revolution led by many members of the Black Robe Regiment in Boston, in Philadelphia, in New York, I don't even agree with some of the theological conclusions that those pastors were proffering back there in their pulpits to their congregations that contributed to some of this. I disagree with some of their theological conclusions. They were what you would loosely consider in the evangelical community post-millennial preachers. They believe the world is going to increasingly be Christianized and then Jesus will return. It has to do with the book of Revelation chapter 22. When does Jesus return? Jesus said he's going to come back. When does he come back? That's been the yearning since Jesus uttered those words. When? Every generation since that those words were uttered are wondering, are we the generation he comes back? And from that come theologies that deal with, well, what does the Bible teach about when he returns? He said he's coming back. He made that very clear. Said that when he was leaving, he was going to leave behind the Holy Spirit. He doesn't tell us what day he's coming back. He said only the Father knows the hour and the day. He describes a season, but even then, we don't know exactly what that means. And it's been man's yearning since Jesus uttered those words that he's going to return, trying to figure out when. And then, as men do, we just do this. We're fallen people. We come up with 37 ideas of how he does come back, when he's coming back. There have been, throughout history, people have tried to point to a day. Well, Jesus is coming back April 4th, 1974. And you all better come up here with me and let's stand on the mountain so we can get a little better jump into heaven. This has been man's endeavor for as long as I've been following. I've heard these prophecies forever. And yet, what's the ultimate call of the Christian? To be a good ambassador today, while we're on the earth today. I'm still here. And so I recognize the yearning of wanting to know. And so many of these preachers and pastors who participated in the Protestant Revolution, I will agree, I'll find who said that Cousin America has eloped with a Presbyterian minister. I'll agree. But I don't agree with the theology they came up with to argue their point. That they were the tip of the spear of the Christianization of the entire world. And as soon as they succeeded in getting America free, America would be the tip of the spear, and we'd see Christianization of the entire world, and then Jesus would return, because that's what it says. That's our those are our theological conclusions about the return of Jesus. There's another class of people that are premillennial dispensationalists. That have a completely counter idea that the world devolves into debauchery and treachery, and then Jesus returns. Guess when we're going to know when Jesus returns? When he returns. So even though these Protestant pastors back in Boston and other places were arguing that the king was kind of like a pharaoh and Moses was Washington and he was going to lead them to the promised land of America, I don't agree with their theological conclusions, but what I do know is God allowed us to create this representative republic. But back then, none of them considered themselves part of an American nation as we seem to understand it today. They were parts of their states. Their states were their nations or their countries, their homelands, whatever descriptor you want to give to it. So, you know, I recognize, folks, I'm a little bit on the a little demoralized today. And part of that is just the wear and tear of dealing with my own brothers and sisters in Christ who are insistent on advancing rhetoric that has absolutely no meaning, or does it have meaning, and they're just afraid to say what they really believe. And I want to get back to that. I want to come back to that when we get back from this break. Because I think perhaps lurking just below the surface is a desire amongst many in the evangelical community to create a theocracy. They know, they're smart enough to know we can't say it, because if we ever said our intent is to create a theocracy, you want to talk about marginalization. Christians might, they might actually get outlawed at that point by a law that would violate the divine nature of God. I'm beginning to wonder if there really isn't a secret little code word, a code desire, if you will, expressed in the idea of restoring a Christian America, that what we really want to create is a theocracy. I don't. I want to be clear about that. As an evangelical, born-again Christian who's pastored churches, I don't want to become a theocracy. You know, thank you, Joe, for that. I just got a very clever little message from one of my Facebook friends. You may be right, Joe. I don't. I don't think theocracies have been a good idea throughout history. And I'll explain why when I come back from this break. But right now, I want to ask you, if you like what you're hearing on the Crusade Channel today, and you probably don't, let me see where we are in Shoutcast. I'm probably number 300 today. Let's see. Well, we're not number one. We're number two. But if you like what you're hearing, you probably don't. You probably already checked out and said, well, Kreslin's is assaulting my senses today. Well, but in case you do, why not support our crusade and become a Founders Past member today and gain instant streamline and, I'm sorry, streaming. I don't know where I got the word streamline. And streaming and download access to every episode in this show and all the others on the Crusade Channel, including the Mike Church Show, my good friend Gregory Carpenter's Reverse Deception, Dr. Michael T. George's My Story of America, Dr. Kevin Gutzman, The Constitution Hour, Suzanne Sherman, and the Suzanne Option. All these shows you would have access to if you were a Founders Pass member today. You could download them and listen to them at your convenience. You can subscribe to the Founders Pass for as little as 23 cents a day, and you can also choose between a monthly and a yearly membership. And during July, how many more days we have left? What, 18 days? During July, for every yearly membership, we'll ship you an autographed copy of Humility of Heart signed by this new edition's editor, our very own Mike Church, and we'll get it to you for free as part of your membership. But that's not all. As a special free gift, we are also offering beautiful handmade wooden kitchen cutting boards from our sponsor, McClureBlock.com. Please go to their website, McClureBlock.com. Look at the stuff these guys sell. It is unbelievable. And if you become a founding father or crusader, or you make a $500 cash donation to our monthly crowdfunding campaign, you'll get one of these handmade, beautiful wooden kitchen cutting boards for free. We'll ship it right to you. Please join our crusade today and become a Founders Pass member by going to veritasradionetwork.com/the join button, or you can call 866-483-3833. That's 866-483-3833. Our number here on the Mark Kreslin Show is 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. This is the Mark Kreslin Show on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be.